From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. President-elect Joe Biden met this week with workers and business owners who had been impacted by the coronavirus pandemic. With Congress having failed to pass more COVID-related relief for struggling workers and businesses, many Americans are reaching a breaking point. Now, a centrist and bipartisan group of lawmakers has begun touting a modest $908 billion package that on Thursday won the support of Democratic leaders Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, as well as growing numbers of GOP senators. Meanwhile, new data about the CARES Act Paycheck Protection Program shows a number of troubling aspects, including millions of dollars going to Trump and Kushner properties, and money going to corporations that did not save jobs. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin has defended putting hundreds of billions of unspent dollars from the CARES Act into a fund that his successor will need permission to access. My guest is Amanda Ballantyne, Executive Director of the Main Street Alliance, which is a national network of 30,000 small business owners. We've spoken to her several times during this pandemic. Welcome back to the program, Amanda.
Thanks, Sonali. It's always a pleasure to be here.
So there had to be lawsuits to get the data of how the PPP money was spent. It was interesting that the government simply didn't want to share how this taxpayer fund was spent. There are there's a lot of troubling information, some of which showing that nearly $3.5 million went straight to the president and his son-in-law's own properties, which seems to be a pretty serious conflict of interest. How would you, first of all, assess how the PPP program, as it was outlined in the CARES Act, how it was administered, and whether it did what it was supposed to do?
So this data confirms what our members at Main Street Alliance and what we've been hearing from business owners all over the country, that the Paycheck Protection Program was seriously flawed, and that the way that it was designed to roll out through the private banking system and the way that the program was accessed by small business owners really privileged large, well-heeled businesses over really small mom and pop businesses in your community. And I think, you know, when you look at the data and you see that over half of the money in the PPP program that was distributed went to about 5% of recipients, sort of when you look at the aggregated data, it really bears that out, that this was a program that helped larger businesses, businesses that may have had other opportunities to identify credit lines and get support or shift their business models. It wasn't the real lifeline that many, many small businesses needed in local communities. That said, it was the only program available. So there are many business owners, including business owners in our network, who were able to make it by because the money was available, who would like another round of it, but have deep concerns about the way that the forgiveness program is working and all of the details necessary for it. So again, you know, it's a sort of necessary but not sufficient solution that has really left a lot of small business owners behind.
And the outlines or conditions of these loans were that if the money from taxpayers was used to retain jobs, that they would become forgivable loans, right?
That was initially the way it was designed, and I think there has been some effort to kind of streamline the forgiveness process for very, very small businesses who might not have the data and reporting mechanisms. I'll say that, you know, the mission of the program was an honorable one. There are other ways that the government could have distributed income to businesses to help them keep their workers on payroll. You can look at the way that the many European countries handled it, not putting money through private banks and a loan program, but instead providing subsidies to employers. We always thought that would have been a more efficient and streamlined approach that wouldn't have had all of the problems. Because in the end of the day, what the PPP did was it exacerbated longstanding access to credit and capital inequities. And while it did help many small businesses, it really helped larger businesses.
If the goal was to save jobs, though, would you say that the PPP loans did their jobs? Even if half of the money went to 5% of businesses, if those businesses, presumably having large numbers of employees, kept employees on payroll, was that a win?
I think that the program rolled out late in the game after many people had already been laid off. And for small business owners, it was tough to get employees back. And there was a period of time where it was unclear how long the program would last. So it would be a 10-week program. Well, we've been in the pandemic now for 8 months. So it was this very short window of time when employees could be brought back. And I think if they had extended the program, if they had made a second round available, it may have actually kept jobs. But I think what we saw is that business owners struggled to get their workforce back and then had to go ahead and lay people off again. So it created a little bit of a roller coaster, I think, for businesses and for unemployed workers.
Was all the money used up? Where is the $455 billion of unspent CARES Act funding fit into all of this that Steven Mnuchin is defending, you know, basically putting out of Joe Biden's Treasury Secretary's reach? Is that part of the PPP funding?
So there was about $100 billion of PPP funding that was left over. There was a lot left over when the deadline finally came through. And we believe that that happened because it was a short-term program that many business owners, you know, they thought it was too risky to take out a loan if they didn't know if they'd be able to actually meet the requirements. You have to remember that as they were rolling out the program, they were also changing the requirements of how it would work through the regulatory process. They were kind of building the plane as they were flying it. So I think the data is still out really on why there was money left over, because we certainly believe there was a deep need for small business support at the time. But again, the program application process for the program ended in August, I believe. And so I think most business owners believed at the time that Congress would put another relief package in place in August or September. And then they thought maybe after the election. So it's been this tremendously long period of time in which business owners have been waiting for relief and haven't gotten any. I think it's a real challenge, and it's a challenge to kind of start up a big program and then stop it and not give business owners clarity so they can plan effectively for their business.
Right. I mean, you can't just go by on what a loan, what sort of, you know, if there's a loan that's available, but it might be forgivable, it might not, it's a short term. Anybody who runs a business knows that you have to plan long term. No one had any ideas how long the pandemic would last. There might be some hope on the horizon now with the vaccine, but that uncertainty is just not something that especially a small business can tide over. Bigger businesses that have access to funds, that have money that they can get through investors, are much more easily able to tide over disasters like this one than small businesses that operate usually on razor-thin margins, right?
Right. I mean, that's absolutely true. Laying people off, bringing them back onto the payroll is a very expensive process. And so having to do that for a very short period of time and then not having that program re-upped and made available again has been challenging. I think there are a lot of business owners who don't believe they'll be able to repay the loan effectively. I mean, it's a real problem. And I think changes could be made to the program to make it more effective for the business owners who've gotten it. We also really, if we want to support small independent businesses, and particularly small independent businesses owned by people of color, we need to move a grant or subsidy-based program to support these businesses. And while I think it's important to support employment and support on-ramps to getting the economy back on track, businesses who have been without aid for so long have racked up tremendous debt, you know, for fixed costs like rent, utilities, equipment, insurance. And they also have been trying to renovate and retrofit their shops for safety. Right. You know, so there's a real urgent need in the independent business community right now for subsidy payments, direct subsidy payments to small businesses to get them through this period of time. So we think there's a short-term agenda for the new Biden administration to move immediate economic relief for small business owners and for unemployed workers in their communities. And doing that in a very significant way, much more significant, I think, than Congress is talking about right now, would actually make the recession shorter and would get local business back on track and keep our communities, you know, having access to really diverse, good local businesses.
There's been a lot of anger from the public who is worried about the vaccine at seeing, you know, like restaurants continuing to operate, bars continuing to operate. But of course, for small business owners, from their perspective, not operating means shutting down potentially forever. And it seems as though this is an unfair position that the government has put businesses in, because had there been a program where companies, small businesses were given grants and their employees paid to stay at home, the economy and the nation could have tided this crisis with fewer deaths and fewer closed businesses, right?
That's absolutely true. And there are several European countries that took that approach. You can look at them. Their economies are in better shape. Their business sectors are in better shape. Their workers are in better shape, even though even those types of solutions haven't been perfect, but they've been better than what we have. It's a false choice to say that we have to choose between closing businesses for public safety and keeping a small business sector intact. The government has the resources and the ability to support businesses through public policy closures and to take that sort of lightning rod political conversation off the table, to keep businesses thriving, to keep people in their homes. Our government is capable of doing that. But right now, or at least during the Trump administration, the responsibility for that has just been left on the states. And that's not effective or an equitable solution, because the states do not have the revenue to support the level and scope of the crisis to support the policy solutions. So there needs to be a partnership between the federal government and the states to move us all through this. It doesn't have to be a moment where we pit small business against the interests of public health and workers.
Do you feel that Congress has really lapsed in its duty to pass a second COVID relief bill? I mean, right now we're seeing negotiations for a very pared down $908 billion bill, which is just twice the size of the unspent fund that Mnuchin is trying to keep out of reach of Janet Yellen. But, you know, before that, it's just been weeks and there's been no movement. The House Democrats passed a large, I believe it was $2 trillion bill early in this year. And the GOP-dominated Senate simply refused to even consider it. And they're only now getting to the table. And it's not even clear if there's going to be enough relief for small businesses. What do you make of this?
Yeah, I mean, we supported the HEROES Act. We think that the HEROES Act was on par with the scope of the crisis that our country has been facing. And, you know, I think that GOP leadership in the Senate had, you know, just abandoned its duty and played politics instead of pushing through packages that would actually support working people and small business owners. And I think there's an ideological belief among GOP leadership that it's just not the government's role to step in a crisis like this. And I believe millions of American taxpayers deserved better. We deserved better. And my hope is that Joe Biden will think big, not just about the coronavirus relief package, but about how to rebuild a small business economy and how to really support micro entrepreneurs in our communities who suffered through COVID. There's a real opportunity, I think, as we turn the corner and look forward to a recovery. And I really hope that Congress can think outside the box and that Joe Biden can be a leader who really drives systemic change in the way that access to credit and capital works for small business owners.
What could Biden do? He met recently with workers, with small business owners who've been affected by the pandemic. If he does not have the cooperation of the Senate, which if Republicans, you know, win the two Georgia Senate seats, they will retain their slim majority control. If Biden does not have the cooperation of the Senate, it seems unlikely that he would be able to pass do much legislatively, at least.
I think that's a real challenge. So I think that my hope is that he works really, really hard to build support for much more expansive legislative relief. It's true that we need appropriations. There are things that President Biden could do in the longer term sense to really overhaul the way, for example, that the SBA works, the way that the Commerce Department engages with small business owners, and really sort of move a bigger, longer term package. In the short term, to the extent that it's possible to streamline the way that PPP loan forgiveness works, and I would actually say probably this will rankle progressives a little bit, but we really believe that PPP loan forgiveness needs to extend up to a much larger number. Right now, I think when I say PPP loan forgiveness, I mean automatic forgiveness. We think that it needs to extend up to a larger number than I think what is the $50,000 right now. We think, so changing that, which I think could be done through regulation, to like $200,000 or $300,000 for those recipients. And I just think moving that money out, moving grants in the, you know, to the extent possible with existing CARES Act money, perhaps moving them through state and local governments rather than through the private lending system or the federal government would be a more effective way to distribute that money equitably. And then finally, I think there are a set of regulations that could be put in place to prevent predatory loan behavior, especially for COVID relief, but also in the long term, because small business owners are often subject to predatory lending relationships with, you know, fintech and other almost payday loan style lending operations. And that, I think, has been a pretty rampant problem during this crisis. There's not a lot of regulation for small business lending. So I think that there are both short-term and longer-term ways that, you know, the Biden administration could prevent creditors for business loans coming after people's personal assets. And I think that's going to be really important for protecting wealth from particularly communities of color, but also other underbanked communities.
Do you think that the Biden administration will take full advantage of everything at its disposal? Will Janet Yellen, who's slated to be the next Treasury Secretary, do what's necessary? I mean, we've seen some positive signs among his the White House economic advisors, who are people who've worked on issues around inequality before, you know, and who have a pretty good record of progressive economic policies. But Biden is someone who has held back, if you will, from being bold, if you look at his record as a past lawmaker politician.
So I think this is a moment to be bold, and I really hope that he is bold. I think when we look at Janet Yellen, I think that she's a great pick for the Fed. I think, you know, for our membership, we tend to represent very, very small businesses, you know, businesses with, you know, maybe 1 to 15 employees. Certainly we have larger businesses in our network, but the businesses that we're really working with on a day-to-day basis are really small businesses who are left out in general from high quality access to credit and capital. And I think there are, you know, there are certainly existing programs in government, but I think an overhaul in a pretty deep way of the way that, you know, the SBA and the Fed engage with micro businesses and entrepreneurs in particularly unbanked communities is a pretty essential piece. And I think sometimes it's a piece that progressives forget because I think the attention is often on high growth industries that are going to produce a lot of jobs. I think there needs to be a sea change in thinking about that because these entrepreneurs who employ just small groups of people are actually a really big backbone of the workforce and keeping wealth circulating in local communities.
And they're also a huge part of the cultural fabric of cities.
Yep. And so my hope is that, you know, this new administration really takes a look at that and takes a look at businesses that have been unbanked for so long, even if they're not in high growth industries, right? Because doing that could create so much opportunity for people who've just not had access to it. It could really unleash a new kind of entrepreneurship, we think, in this country. And that's where we really want to see President Biden's administration think big.
Those businesses that have closed down during the pandemic simply because they couldn't make ends meet or the type of service they were offering was incompatible with the safety precautions, will they ever come back? Have we lost for good a huge percentage of the, you know, the blood, sweat, and tears that that people have poured into these enterprises that they might have poured their life savings into?
I think the prediction is that if businesses went out of business permanently because of the pandemic, they won't come back. And I think you'll see a difference in the way businesses act in high rent cities versus sort of rural or lower rent communities in terms of cost, you know, when market concentration happens, it increases barriers to entry for independent businesses. So in high rent cities, independent businesses that we've lost will be, there will be a huge gentrifying force there. I think in other communities, it's really important to just protect business owners through really good bankruptcy laws if they end up moving out of business permanently, because I think, you know, there's both the can you get back into business in the market where you live, or have the costs gone up because bigger businesses are now occupying that space. There's another question about how business closure impacts someone's ability to kind of reopen a business and start over, you know, and I think there are a lot of questions about how that'll impact people. I'll give you some quick statistics. I think in September, the SBA said 7 to 8% of small businesses overall closed. There are huge racial disparities in that. For example, of those 7 to 8% overall, which is a huge number of businesses, 6% of those businesses were white, 18% of those businesses were Black owned. So 2/3 more Black owned businesses closed, or since September at least, than white businesses. So I think when we think about which businesses can come back, we also have to understand that many businesses that we've lost have also been lost in communities of color that have historically really, really struggled to get access to good credit. That's going to be another huge hurdle for those businesses and for, like you said, the culture of the communities that they were serving.
And also, we know that the access to the kinds of loans that are available, or the kind of support that's available from government, it's onerous. The paperwork, the legal know-how required, the hours spent trying to figure out the complicated rules and guidelines, and you know, a lot of people and business owners may not be aware of what they have available. All of these things, that the less privilege you have, the less access you have to the network or the framework of support that is already available, which is something that we forget about sometimes.
Yeah, that's a great point. And that's one of the things we're talking about when we talk about how Biden could rethink the SBA.
Right. Simplify and streamline it. Yeah.
Simplify and streamline it, right, because most of the public policy that serves business in this country serves businesses that are large enough to have an HR department or to have, you know, an accountant or, accounting services. So there's a level of sort of size and business sophistication that's required to access those types of credit opportunities like you're talking about. It doesn't mean that micro entrepreneurship programs don't exist, but you're right, they're hard to access, and it really depends on the quality of the services in your town, so they're not equitable around the country. Our business owners in our network would say what they needed to start and grow their business was personal net wealth in their personal network. They needed either to have their own money or they
capital,
needed to have
yeah.
Right. Because they weren't able to get the amount of money they needed from banks. And when I say amount, I don't mean large amounts. I mean small amounts of money with low risk, you know. And that's really how we need to think about fostering entrepreneurship, is using our public programs to provide small, high quality, low interest loans to micro entrepreneurs who've been in unbanked communities, and really make those programs available and accessible and very low risk.
Give out a website, Amanda, for where people can find out more about Main Street Alliance.
Sure. MainStreetAlliance.org is our website. There's a lot of information there about COVID relief programs, but also about our small business agenda more generally.
We'll post a link to that from our website. Always a pleasure to have you on. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Nolly. Take care.
My guest has been Amanda Ballantyne, Executive Director of the Main Street Alliance, which is a national network of 30,000 small business owners. We've been discussing how small businesses are surviving or not during the pandemic. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Do follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.